Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight is Crime Fiction Night. I am kicking off tonight's double feature with Jamie Mason, who is a Canadian author, who's written not only science fiction, but thrillers, and we're going to talk to him in just a second, so don't go away. Everyone, welcome again to Authors on the Air. As I said earlier, we are doing two shows tonight with very, very, very important crime fiction writers. They are emerging authors in the dark crime fiction genre, especially thrillers. My first guest tonight is Jamie Mason. He is a resident on Vancouver Island. He's a former private investigator and worked for the RAND Corporation and has some really cool stories to tell about that. He started off writing dark science fiction and short fiction, which appeared on Spec, Abyss, and Apex, and the Canadian Science Fiction Review. He's a member of Pen Canada and a signatory of the Leap Manifesto. I can't wait to hear what that is, because I have not a one clue. I am very happy to welcome to the show Jamie Mason. Jamie, welcome all the way from Canada to Authors on the Air. How are you?
I'm fine, Pam, and thank you for that kind introduction, and it's a real pleasure to be here.
Thank you. You and I do a lot of chatting on Facebook, and I always love your posts because they're so interesting. You very rarely dabble in trivia. You always have something really pertinent and relevant to talk about. So thank you for that, because I, on the other hand, post a lot of nonsense, except for when I have a show coming up. I really appreciate following you. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very kind of you. And, you know, lest you think that I'm completely a stuffed shirt, I like the Sam Elliott pictures. Those are really cool.
You are so funny. You know, I have to be honest with everyone. I have no idea how that started. I mean, I like Sam Elliott. He's got a great voice, and it's that really rich baritone. But I like Luciano Pavarotti, too. You know, and he has a really deep voice, and there are others. I mean, another dark crime fiction writer, Ed Kurtz, has a really deep voice that almost makes me crazy when I talk to him. And I must have said something about Sam Elliott one day, and someone posted a picture. And then I was like, oh, I'll hubba hubba about that. And since then, it's kind of like, everybody sends me Sam Elliott pictures. So it's okay with me. I love the guy, you know? But I'm not obsessed. I want you to know, no matter what
okay.
It looks like.
Whatever you say.
See, <I'm> like, okay. Thanks a lot, Jamie. I appreciate it. So listen, I was reading your blog post. I really like this. By the way, for listeners, Jamie's Scribbles at .wordpress.com is a really, really interesting page. First of all, did you design your site yourself?
Yeah, actually, that's what I did with the WordPress template. Yeah.
Man, it's really, really good. So, I want to talk about your current release that you did with Sean Smith, who was on not too long ago on this show, called A Certain Fury. This is your latest thriller. It is kind of dystopian. I like it a lot, but more than that, I really like the backstory for how this book came about. So first, will you please tell listeners what Certain Fury is about?
Sure. Certain Fury, very simply, is a story about a president of the United States who is erratic and unpredictable and whose behavior tumbles over the edge into insanity. And when an attempt is made
to... Oh, it's nonfiction. I'm sorry, Jamie. I didn't know it was nonfiction.
Well,
I'm teasing.
I suppose, you know, people could be forgiven for drawing analogies. That's not, you know, that I have nothing to do with that. But what is suggested in the book is that after an attempt to remove an unstable president via the 25th Amendment fails, the United States military steps up and removes him from power.
Wow. So I love the premise of the book, but I love even more the backstory about how you came up with this idea. Will you please talk about your time at RAND and your former mentor, Dr. Tom Lincoln? I just cannot get enough of this story.
Okay. Well, Thomas L. Lincoln, for folks who don't know him, was the senior scientist of RAND Corporation. He actually joined RAND in 1967. And he was his main area of expertise was medicine and computers, but he consulted as any senior scientist at RAND would on a variety of different matters, from science and medicine all the way through to national security, military affairs, healthcare. And I met Tom actually when he was hired as a consultant for a firm that I was working for. Now Tom, because he was a very brilliant man, was in demand as a consultant, but he was the last of the great American eccentrics. He was one of these guys who he had a global level intelligence, but he would often wear the same shirt for 4 days in a row. He wore tennis shoes everywhere. The guy was he was incredibly informal. He never met a tie he liked. He drank expensive scotch, wow, and he talked about weighty ideas. So nobody knew what to do with him. So they gave him to me, and they said, "Well, Jamie's weird. He can handle Tom." And what began as me sort of taking care of him as he was a consultant at one company ended up with my basically transitioning over and being full time on Tom's staff for about 2 years, starting in 1993. And it was during that time that Tom began to share some of his collection of interesting things with me, one of which was a declassified paper written sometime in the 1970s, asking the question of, you know, if the U.S. military had to remove a sitting president, how would they do it? And that little memo, it was a two-page memo, it was typed on an IBM Selectric electric typewriter. I read that and it just blew my mind.
I before you go any further, I want to ask you, what is a cryptozoologist? What does that mean?
Oh, okay, yeah, that has to do with Tom's undergraduate degree. Tom had an undergraduate in cryptozoology, and that's folks who study unusual and or mythical creatures. So say if you were interested in learning about Sasquatches, for example, a cryptozoologist would be the guy that you would talk to. Similarly, you know,
who
if you're
knew
interested,
there was ever such a thing? But who would have ever thought you could study unicorns and Sasquatch and get a degree in it? That's bizarre to me. But he also was a medical doctor, wasn't he? And he was one of Carl Jung's graduate students.
Yes, he was. He was a personal graduate student of Carl Jung. He was the head of the School of Anatomic Pathology at the Chicago School of Medicine. And he was also one of the first American doctors to make significant use of computers beginning in the late 70s, early 80s. So he was a brilliant, brilliant guy. And the U.S. government was very smart in consulting him whatever they needed to.
Wow. Now, you said that he had an extensive, very strange collection of stuff. For example, he had an album of the human body that was a series of 300 cross sections. You're right, that's very strange. And he had medical files of Ebola patients, which is weird. But more interesting to me was that he had notes from meetings with General Norman Schwarzkopf when they war game Desert Storm. And it's almost mind-boggling to me. Why would he be involved in that type of a thing? Is it just because the man was so brilliant that he really could strategically plan and think about all these variety of topics?
Well, here's maybe I can do a little bit of educating here. Very little
Please
of what
do.
The United States, very little of what the United States does abroad, it does without passing it before some kind of think tank or board of experts. And RAND is sort of the go-to of choice for that. Now, when you're talking about Norman
yes.
Schwarzkopf, you're talking about an attempt to invade a country in a very fragile region of the world, a very explosive region of the world. And RAND was tapped to do the computer modeling. Basically, what it was Schwarzkopf came up with his idea, and then for one reason or another, they passed it by the guys at RAND. This is not unusual. And Tom was involved in developing the computer modeling that led to actually the military breakthrough was the Hail Mary pass, the very unusual entry into Iraq by the back door that, of course, became Schwarzkopf's signature victory. So Tom was involved basically in the regular course of affairs. It's not unusual for the Pentagon to tap RAND, the White House to tap RAND, senior elements of the U.S. government and military infrastructure do it all the time.
Amazing. I knew of RAND when I was growing up in South Florida. It was their electronics division, not their think tank. And I know that they're a global company, and they're huge and very well respected. So let's talk about your connection to RAND and how Certain Fury came about, because your education just on being Dr. Tom's assistant and kind of personal assistant, I don't know even what your title would be, must have just been amazing. And you probably have enough story ideas to last for the rest of your young life, I would imagine. So let's talk about your conversation with Sean Smith, who is your co-author, and how this book came to be.
Well, just to step back, to let you know what my role was with Tom, it started out very much as just sort of a personal assistant. But it kind of evolved because Tom and I discovered that we had a lot of interests in common, like, French poetry and good scotch. And we ended up becoming personal friends, and I kind of transitioned from an assistant to a sounding board. Tom would bounce ideas off me, and then because he knew I could write, I ended up co-authoring or ghostwriting with Tom a number of things. So I became kind of like a junior partner, I guess you could say. So
that is
based
very
on
cool.
Based on that experience, when the time came to chat with Sean, I was talking with Sean Smith, and your listeners will know him as the author of Tears of Abraham, wonderful novel. And Sean is a personal friend of mine. So we were chatting, and I happened to mention my time at RAND and this, little white paper that I'd seen. The idea being, and this was very broad strokes, understand. This was a paper that was just asking the questions, how might we go about it? What would be the things to consider? And one of the things, for example, that they considered was if you're going to do a military coup in the United States, you want to wait until after close of business on the East Coast so the stock market's closed. Little things like that. And I was sharing that with Sean. And Sean said, that sounds like a hell of a story. Let's write it. And, it had never really occurred to me to put that into a fictitious form because it was something I saw, under sort of quasi-confidential circumstances. But I thought, you know what?
Sure.
What the heck? Let's just go ahead and write it. And, you know, inspired by Sean's get up and go attitude, that's exactly what we did.
It's a fascinating book, by the way. I've enjoyed it immensely. It is just a fascinating book. And I hope that listeners will take note. Certain Fury is the title. It is written by Jamie Mason and Sean T. Smith, in case you want to look for that on the Zon. You know where to find it. And by the way, if you want to call in and speak to my guest, Jamie Mason, the phone lines are open. That's 347-633-9609. If someone wants to call in and say hello, the first caller, I'm going to gift you a copy of the ebook for Certain Fury. Let's talk more about your books, because I want to go back to the beginning, because a long time ago, and not really that long ago, but we're going to say a long time ago, you were writing kind of dark horror science fiction kind of stuff, and very different than what you're writing now. So your first book, and tell me if I'm wrong, was Echo, or was it Kezi of Babylon? Not really sure which one it was. Or am I wrong altogether and it was Ashes?
No, the first book that I published was Echo, and that was published with Drollery Press. Yeah.
And now Echo is a traditional, well, not really, nothing you're writing is traditional, but Echo is kind of a science fiction and kind of a little, well, it's more science fiction than anything else, but it is kind of scary. So let's talk about this for a little bit and why you wrote this particular genre. Will you give kind of the thumbnail on Echo?
Sure. Echo is a science fiction novel that tells the story of a group of survivors from an Earth starship that became, malfunctioned in space and had to go into orbit around a planet. The crew abandoned ship and started a civilization on the planet. And time has passed, and they've forgotten where they came from. So the descendants of the original starship crew would look up, and they'd see this light winking overhead at night. And they would ask themselves, you know, what is that thing up there? And basically, the action of Echo has to do with a religion that the descendants found to explain this light passing overhead, and how that religion is challenged by a young woman named Sarai, who ends up discovering the truth about where they come from. So she has to, in order to educate these people about where they come from and where they have to go, entrenched religion that's been created that offers an alternate explanation.
Interesting. I thought at first it was space opera, but it's not. It is purely science fiction, for sure. And so I appreciate that. I like science fiction very much. And before the show, we were talking about how many times I've had guests on the show who write thrillers, pretty much the way you do now, who also are very, very interested in writing horror and science fiction. And I think sometimes when you think about, especially a thriller about a murder or a serial killer, it is horrifying, and so maybe that's the connection. Or if it's a dystopian thriller, maybe that's the connection with science fiction. I'm not really sure why, but you are an interesting lot of writers, those of you who write in thriller crime fiction, dark crime fiction anyway. Your next book is Kezi of Babylon, correct? Is that Permuted Press that you was publishing that one?
Yeah, I went ahead and I was working with Permuted, and I brought out two books with them, and the first was Kezi of Babylon. That's right.
So this one is a zombie apocalypse, and so I love the opening line, because you say the opening blurb. You say the zombie apocalypse begins the same night your stripper girlfriend skips town with the money you owe your drug dealer. You can't pull anyone in any faster than that. So I like this. This is kind of a throw it all against the wall, and a lot of it happens to stick. You had a lot of good reviews on this book. Where did this one come from?
Well, Kezia of Babylon, my Vancouver Island novels.
Yes, I saw that. Must be interesting where you live, Jamie.
Well, it is. It's Vancouver Island is kind of a backwater. It's an interesting little island. It's kind of this cross section of government employees, immigrants, old hippies, welfare bums, and Canadian hillbillies, all sort of watched over by the Hells Angels and the RCMP. It's sort of this dysfunctional little island. Yeah, it's this dysfunctional little island that floats in the Pacific. And I thought, you know, if there's going to be zombies here, what are they going to be like? And then I thought, oh, well, they'll probably be unionized, you know. It's permanently 1974 here, right? But basically, it was my experiences just living here and my involvement. At the time, I was doing a lot of private investigation. I was dealing with a lot of kind of criminal types, and a lot of them are actually very interesting. So I took some of what I experienced dealing with bad guys, dealing with the cops, dealing with the drug dealers, dealing with the shoplifters, and I kind of pulled it all together and put it into this zombie story. What would happen if a zombie apocalypse hit Vancouver Island?
Now, it's a very tongue-in-cheek story, but it's exceptionally well-written. Your reviews are excellent on this book, so congratulations on that. I like your blurb about the book, and it kind of gives me an idea that you're not taking yourself too seriously. Although your writing might be pristine, you're really not taking yourself too seriously. And at the end of the day,
I hope not.
Isn't that important at the end of the day, don't you think?
Well, yeah, I hope not. I hope I'm not taking myself seriously. The way I like to think of it is, you know, I take my work seriously, but I don't take myself
absolutely
seriously.
I'm so glad. And you are a cat guy, so you and I are going to be buddies for a long time. So not that I don't love dogs, I do, but I just have cats, and I know you do too.
Yes.
Your next book is called The Book of Ashes, and I like the cover art on this one. I can't quite really figure out exactly what I'm looking at, except they kind of look like totems, but really odd totems that I've never seen before. So am I wrong, or maybe you can explain more succinctly than I can what that cover look is really about?
Well, yeah, the cover actually that was designed by Christian Dentulon. He's a very fine cover artist. He designed that for me. And really, it's very appropriate because living on Vancouver Island, there are a lot around the island.
Are there?
This particular region of Canada was populated by the Coast Salish First Nations and the various bands within that particular tribe. And many of them were carvers of totem poles. In fact, the city that I live in, which is Duncan, BC, well, I actually live outside the city. I'm in the forest outside the city. But the city is itself called the City of Totems. The book itself takes place principally in Duncan. It's it is a strict post-apocalyptic story. It deals with a biological disaster, and it takes place in Duncan. So those totems, which are actually not Native American or First Nation totems, I think they're totems from the Far East. Christian took and adapted them. And you can see that they're all sort of burning. There's smoke,
yes,
and there's burning. And all of the totems have spoken except one. And as they've spoken, they've burned. And you can see that they're sitting in a big pile of sawdust. Talking
yes
itself has created the combustion. And it's a book about the power of lies and the power of rumor.
Wow. It's a very evocative and symbolic cover for your story, and I applaud you. It's eerie looking, but now that you've explained it even further, it's really a great cover. So, and I think covers are really important because so many readers get only a thumbnail view of book covers when they're scrolling as fast as they can through Amazon or their other book sites of choice. So you've really got to have one that stands out. And I like this cover very much. Congratulations on that. And of course, your reviews are excellent on this one. And that's important, too. So now we come a little bit further in. And you now are writing a book in Kindle World. Can you please tell me which world that you're writing in? Because I suspect that it's a friend of ours whose writing I enjoy very, very much. Let's talk about your Kindle World novellas.
Sure. I actually decided to go ahead and contact Kindle Worlds and the author in question. I think that we're talking about the same guy, and that is
Steve Conkley.
Steve Conkley.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Steve, the Perseid Collapse maestro.
Yes.
I met Steve through Sean Smith, and I contacted Steve. You know, the Perseid Collapse series, of course, he's invited other authors to, you know, flesh out his vision of a post-apocalyptic world. And I wrote to him, and I said, you know, there's a lot of stuff, there's a lot of writers writing about what happens in America. And I began a longstanding and continuing partnership with Steve, he's a wonderful guy, very encouraging, very generous guy.
He is.
And
he really
is. And it was because of... He really is, and it's because of him that I ended up moving more into thrillers.
I will tell you that I have had the opportunity to meet Steve in person, and he's every bit as nice and as funny and as kind and generous as he is online. And as a matter of fact, he has family that lives about 30 minutes from me. When he's here, we have not spoken because he's so busy with family, but we've met at conferences and I've interviewed him extensively. I think he's one of the, to me, I think he's one of the best writers now. I think he's one of the best working writers there is. There's nothing about his books that I don't love. So your entry into Kindle Worlds, the Perseid Collapse, the first book is called Gavin's War. Am I to assume that Gavin's War takes place again on Vancouver Island or surrounding Vancouver Island?
Yeah, most of the action of Gavin's War takes place in the strait between Vancouver Island and the mainland, which is filled with islands. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so for those of you who do not know, Kindle Worlds is a very special place, a continuing series of books centered around one main premise. That author is offered what's called a world, and in that world, in this case, Steve Conkley created the Perseid Collapse. There are a series of books that he wrote, and then in his world, other authors and even fans may contribute as long as it's a similar story. You can't kill off his main characters, but you certainly can do offshoots of the story, which in this case, Jamie has. So you can go look into Amazon Kindle World and find Gavin's War. But beyond that, you did another book. You did Gavin's Woman, right? Let me go and look. Gavin's Woman. And how did you decide to write from the female POV?
Well, it's interesting, actually. I found that Gavin's War was really, really well received. I probably got more fan feedback from that book than just about anything else I'd written. People really liked the character of Gavin, who's sort of this irascible old fisherman who ends up in a position of having to fight off smugglers and Chinese special forces guys. And people really liked it. And I actually kind of felt like I wanted to give them something else. You know, they enjoyed it so much more than I ever thought anybody would. that I thought, well, okay, I'm going to continue this story. Yeah. And it turns out that, you know, Gavin gets himself a girlfriend in the first novella. And I thought, well, what if, you know, course of their association, she got pregnant and had a kid and decides to come back to the island where Gavin was living. And that became the premise for Gavin's Woman.
I like it. I like it a lot because you wrote one from the male perspective and one from the female perspective. And as you said, this is kind of the turning point in the way you're writing, because there is a nexus between science fiction and post-apocalyptic or dystopian, whichever you choose to call it. But you've definitely ratcheted up the tension on this, and I read your reviews, which are excellent on this, on both books, as a matter of fact. Congratulations on that. And that brings us to Certain Fury. So I want to ask you a few questions, not related specifically to the books, but more about you. You've had a very interesting career, and one of the things you told me that you did was you worked as a private investigator for a while. How did you get started in that, and why did you leave?
Well, my involvement in private investigations actually began years ago and is ongoing. I am a licensed PI under the province of British Columbia. I have a private investigator's license. I'm not able to open my own company. That's a different license and a different sort of business arrangement. But sure. I ended up becoming a PI because I was working actually in the private security field. I was
wow.
working as a security guard, and it's kind of a lot like policing. You know, you have your uniform people and you have your undercover. There is undercover security as well. And I just sort of stuck getting the license just because I'd done enough training and I had the qualifications, and I ended up moving into a situation where I could work as a PI, doing, like, for example, jobs like loss prevention is a pretty standard thing that PIs do now. Loss prevention, doing subcontract work for other investigators, and occasionally assisting the police in their inquiries, as I have.
Wow.
One of the things that happens around here is we have a large Native population, and we have very specific rules about police going onto Native reserves and enforcing
right.
the law. There are certain principles they have to follow. Now, you know, for most Native folks here, they're happy to cooperate with the police. It's not a problem. But if you are a Native person who wants to break the law and get away with it, you can take advantage of the courtesies and privileges that we afford to our Native people to hide. And
on
so tracking down some
right. right.
Yeah. So
right.
tracking down somebody who hides on the res can be tough, and that's actually an area that I can help out in, and I have in the past.
Wow. Tell everyone where they can find you on the internet, please. I want you to let everyone know where to find you, so that I don't forget to do that before the show ends.
Sure. I have a writer's website, which is Jamie Scribbles, J-A-M-I-E, Scribbles, all one word, .com. And that contains links to my Twitter account, my Facebook, and all that. And I'd also mention that I've recently opened a small press, and you can find us online at stormrhino.com. That's storm as in thunderstorm, rhino as in rhinoceros, stormrhino.com. And
congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah. That's my other presence online.
There you go. I want to tell you, though, if you find Jamie on Facebook, there is another Jamie Mason. You'll know because Jamie is Jamie and the other Jamie is a female. And although she does write crime fiction, too. So I can say I've had both of them on a show. So that's wonderful. But this Jamie happens to answer all his posts on his own. He's a full-time writer, and I like that about him. I like the fact that I'm interacting with an author versus the author's person. You know, you don't have people doing your work. You're actually answering your own stuff, which is really kind of cool for a fangirl like me. What's next for you? What are you working on now?
Well, I'm actually working on two things. The first thing, as a writer, is that I've decided I'm going to be going full-time into the thriller business, and I'm writing the first of what will be an ongoing series of novels. It's called Marius and the Suitcase Nuke. This is a story that follows a guy named John Marius that I've created. He is a Canadian, a former mercenary, retired mercenary, who, because of his skill set and his background, ends up getting pulled into unusual jobs. In this particular novel, which I expect will be coming out this summer, he ends up getting tapped to go find a Canadian general who has gone insane and hidden himself in the mountains of Montenegro with a portable nuclear device and a group of mad disciples. And he's determined to save the world from alien invasion. So the Canadian government taps John Marius to go and get this guy and bring him home. It's an adventure, but it contains all the tongue-in-cheek elements that you enjoyed from Kesey of Babylon.
I love that.
It's a thriller with a lot of humor, and that'll be coming out this summer.
Now, you said you have another project, and what is the second thing?
That is Growing the Press, Storm Rhino Press. What we want to do is we want to get authors submitting short military adventure novel ideas. What we're looking at doing with Storm Rhino is reviving the old men's adventure fiction books from the 70s. We're talking group books like The Executioner, The Punisher, Donovan's
Devil. Like
pulp
fiction and kind of the old-fashioned noir, the stuff that used to spin around on the wheel in the dime store?
That's
short paperbacks, is that what you're looking at? Yeah, okay. Will Vaharo
exactly
is a good
it.
One to talk to about that. Boy, Will Vaharo is brilliant on that. He's one of the most eloquent speakers and a great writer of pulp, so I encourage you to talk to him. He's in the Seattle area, so you're not far from him. What do you do in your spare time for fun?
Spare time? What's that?
You got to pull your head out of the laptop every once in a while, Jamie. It's necessary. Do you get out and you know, get out in the world at all? I mean, regardless of how small your world is, you know, square footage wise or square miles wise, do you get out and do anything other than write and read?
Well, I actually, you know, I tend to divide my time pretty much between, you know, working a day job, working, you know, doing the odd gig as a PI or as a security guy, and writing. But when I'm relaxing, you know, I like to, I have a guitar. I like to strum my guitar.
I have
a cat who keeps me, you know, very busy with her various demands. And, I live on a river. I live right on the Cowichan River. And the older I get, the more I just like to sit and stare out the window at the river. It's a beautiful place, and the Cowichan people, the Cowichan tribe who live around here, they've been very generous about letting me live near their river. They've been living here for 10,000 years, and I can
wow.
see why. This river is hypnotic and beautiful, and I love my scenery and my neighbors, and so I'm very blessed. So I like to enjoy nature and music, and yeah, my cat.
That's very cool. Jamie Mason, I can't thank you enough for being with me on Authors on the Air tonight. I've kept you longer than I told you I would. I hope you don't mind. For those listening, Jamie is going to be a guest blogger for the Librarian Talks, our network blog. I will put a little note out there to let you know when his posts are available. In the meantime, we're going to go and follow you on jamiescribbles.com and look for you on Facebook, and keep an eye out on Amazon, because I would imagine you're going to have a book pretty soon, aren't you?
Well, Certain Fury is out now, and the next one, like I said, should be out probably this summer. I'm thinking probably around June for Marius and the Suitcase Nuke.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for spending your evening with me. I truly appreciate it. Will you come back again and chat with me again?
Pam, it would be my pleasure, and it's been an honor, and thank you to you and your listeners. I've had a great time.
Thank you so much, Jamie. Have a great evening. Good night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And that's our show for tonight, folks. Later on, I'll be back at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, with one of, I think, the best female dark crime fiction writers going today, Jen Conley. She'll be with me then. Thanks for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad.